to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Tafford here in the studio with Lauren Landis. The late Reverend Patty Fink is in San Antonio. A couple of weeks ago, you remember she was out in California.
Yep.
She became an internet minister, and her church or her congregation has now moved back to San Antonio where they're from. They're having a reception this weekend, so she went down to the reception since she did marry them.
It's only appropriate that she's there.
And it's one of those, yes, it's perfectly legal. She'll be back next week, give us more details about how to join her church.
her
church does discriminate. Actually, they don't. That's one of their religious precepts, is no discrimination.
Okay.
Yeah. So
you can tell us more about it.
Even against people who do discriminate, she doesn't discriminate. Our guest today, Katie Sprinkle. Katie is an attorney and media darling, or did we decide on media whore?
Media whore's fine.
Media whore's fine. Okay. Leslie Michelle. They're both transgender. They're going to talk about transgender issues. Katie has started, after Katie emerged as transgender, you were living out of town.
Yes, I was living down in Burnet.
Great place to come out as transgender. Half the town there was transgender, so you had a lot of support, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Nothing makes a transition easier than a few hillbillies to help you along the way.
Yeah, see? And came back to Texas, came back to Dallas, and Katie's an attorney. You went the easy route because you didn't have to apply to anybody for a job. You decided to open your own practice.
Yeah, I figure if I discriminate against myself, I've got other problems. So
you decided not to discriminate against yourself, hire yourself.
Yep, and so far...
So far it's working?
So far it's working.
Okay.
I have to crack the whip occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
I need a raise, but my boss won't give me one.
You know, it's one of those things that... What you do is you just have to sit your boss down sometimes and just tell her the way it is. But one thing that Katie did was she realized that other transgender people didn't happen to have themselves as an attorney to let them know what are the steps that you need to do legally to make it easier to transition, and started a legal clinic with Gear over at the Resource Center. Tell us a little bit about the legal clinic and how it got going and how it's been doing.
Well, when I first came back to Dallas, I wanted to start getting more involved in the community. So I went to the Resource Center, met with Blair High, who is the director of Gear, which is Gender Education Advocacy and Resources, which is the local transgender advocacy group. And so I was talking to her about coming in and doing something, and she said, I've got this vision for a legal clinic that can help transgender people. And so we talked about what we would need to do to make that happen. So what has developed is once a quarter, we will have a clinic session. It runs from 6 to 9. People can schedule a 15 to 30 minute time slot, come down and sit with me, and we'll discuss whatever legal issues they have going on in their lives. Some will have family law issues, some will have work-related issues, and then many will have name and gender marker questions.
You know, and this is one of those things, when you come out as gay, if you have a partner, yeah, you need medical powers of attorney, you need wills, you need about 10 different documents just to protect your relationship. But when you come out as gay, you don't have to get anything other than your gay card to prove that you're gay. And the main reason for that is so that the person who converted you gets their toaster oven.
Well, you also get a copy of the gay agenda.
And you have to sign off that you've gotten a copy of the gay agenda.
I just want to know what you have to do to get your set of steak knives.
Right. Well, that's five people. The toaster oven is 10.
Okay. So.
But to actually, I mean, some people are listening to I'm assuming most of our listeners know that we're...
I told you that.
Yeah, gay agenda. They
talked
about it on that
told you they were cute.
But to come out as transgender, okay, back to the serious side again. When somebody becomes transgender, there really are legal things that you have to do because your presentation doesn't match what's on your driver's license or what's on other legal papers. How important is that? it almost sounds to somebody who's never thought about it before like, oh, what's the difference? How often do you show a driver's license?
Well, a lot of people don't even know there's a gender marker on the driver's license, but to us it's in like 30-point type.
Yeah, and it's crucial. I mean, imagine walking into a store, going to pay for something, and you still have your birth name on your credit card, but you present as female. They look at you and they go, I'm sorry, ma'am, you can't use your husband's driver or credit card.
Right, and it's no offense intended. It's just you have one of your own.
And so then they inevitably want to see your driver's license. If you're lucky, all you will do is get the look, which is this. Oh, okay. And then they ring up your transaction. That's if you're lucky. In some parts of the state, you will get the police called.
Oh, wow.
And I got called an it by a store clerk who looked at my credit card, said, hey, I need
to... So best are peculiar looks. Next best is just an insult. And third is getting arrested.
Yeah.
I was at a rental car counter in California and presenting as female before I had my ID changed. And so they called me up to the counter and said, yes, ma'am, can I help you? I said, yeah, I have a reservation. Name's McMurray. And they said, okay. And so they looked it up and they said, can I have your driver's license? So I handed it to them. They looked at me, looked at the driver's license back and forth a couple times. And then she hands it back and goes, thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It's just unnecessary.
Now, you are from California.
Yeah.
The gender marker change means a change on the birth certificate.
Well, on everything. I mean, you'd be surprised.
But that's where it starts from.
That's where it starts.
Birth certificate is the origin, really.
And what state you were born in is what makes the difference.
Well, it determines how easy you're going to be able to get something changed.
Or if.
In Texas, they want a court order. There are 256 district judges in the state of Texas, and there are about 15 who will routinely grant name with gender marker corrections. So that just shows you the disparity that you have. If you live in rural Texas, your odds of being able to get a gender marker correction as well as a name change go down dramatically.
Which comes first, the legal name change or the legal gender marker change?
Depending on where you,
the same time?
Ideally, you want them done at the same time, because if you do them separately, you're going to get hit with two filing fees, which is like $300
sure.
a piece. Now, depending upon where you are in the process of transition, you may have to do them separately because you need to be a little bit further along in transition beyond hormones and be able to get the documentation to the judge for those judges that will grant them. Luckily, we have about 13 of those judges right here in Dallas. So if you're in Dallas, then, you're very fortunate. If you're not in Dallas, you may want to move.
Now, the same sort of thing happens when you're filing an adoption, and especially a second parent adoption in Texas. Most attorneys will tell you you don't have to file in your home county, and that most people for years went to San Antonio, because in San Antonio you can judge shop. So you go to family court, and this judge and that judge are the ones that all attorneys throughout the state knew would do the second parent adoption for a gay couple. You went to one of those judges, you filed it in their court, and there were a couple of judges in family court who all day long they're dealing with divorce and wrecked families, and they just enjoyed doing an adoption, where a new family is starting. Imagine. Now Dallas County is the other place in Texas. Houston's getting a little bit better. There are a few judges, but you can't judge shop. One of the worst counties, apparently, is Tarrant County, where all of the judges will just say no. I've had some attorneys tell me Collin County, they've had some luck. Even Henderson County, they've had some luck. But not, what you do is you go to Dallas County. Is it the same thing with a name change? Do you have to do it in your home county, or can you...
Yeah, the name change is, by statute, it says must be filed, or it actually says may be filed in the county of residency. So if you live in Dallas County, you're home free. If you don't, it's time to move.
If you live in Collin County, then you can't just because you work in Dallas, you can't say, well, this is just convenient, I'm here.
Right.
Well, going back to your analogy with the second parent adoption versus gender marker change, what's upsetting about second parent adoption is the law is rather vague. It's not against the law to have your same-sex partner adopt your child. That's not against the law. So, but it doesn't specifically say that you can either, so it's just kind of vague. So that's what's upsetting. What does the law say about, in Texas, about changing your gender on any certificates?
The Health and Safety Code has a provision where you can obtain a court order for the correction of an error that was made on your birth certificate. And so...
And that error can be many things?
It can be many things. And what we're basically arguing to courts is that there was a mistake made on our birth certificate, because doctors will look between your legs to determine gender, not between your ears, where it's actually located. And there's an error because they listed you as the wrong gender. And so an order from a court can get that changed. Now, when we started the conversation, we started talking about California. There are some states that make it easier to correct your birth certificate than others. In Texas, you need a court order. The best you can hope for on a gender marker change is that they will amend your birth certificate, which means they stamp amended on your birth certificate. And if somebody wants to get the long form, they get to see your original and then the new one, which they might as well just put a big scarlet letter on us.
Right.
Because in situations where you need a birth certificate, that's a clue. Oh, wait a minute. This was amended for some reason. Why? And inevitably you get that question.
So it says amended, but it doesn't say what was amended.
No. You have to go back, but it tips you off.
But something has been changed on there. Nationwide, I never thought about this till this very second. Nationwide, are there any states that you know of that you actually just cannot get a legal
gender change?
Statewide, I don't know of any, because the way states are set up, it's subdivided into counties, except Louisiana, which I think still uses parishes.
They do.
But some require proof of surgery.
Yes, I'm still – you'll have an overriding statute that grants some level of authority to a judge who usually will sit in a county or a district.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of overall shapes – you know, like Texas, it's – we have a very specific name change statute. And then, of course, we're using the Health and Safety Code's general language to get the gender marker change. In some states, they actually have a statute that says go through these steps to change it. Now, after that, then you get into this whole thing of, do you have judges who are willing to read between the lines, or those that are saying, no, we're just not going to do this?
Mm-hmm. What is the name change law, actually? Isn't the main purpose of preventing a name change to prevent any kind of fraud, like you owe money and you're trying to get out of that?
Right. You have to establish... First, you have to clearly list all your identifiers, and then you have to establish that you're not attempting to perpetrate any kind of fraud. You can't escape criminal liability, civil liability, or legal obligations.
Mm-hmm. You're not creditors.
Creditors and such, and that you're not under a legal requirement to register as a sex offender. Those are the main things that the statute specifically says you must establish.
But I read the newspaper, and they tell me all the time that the main reason that men want to dress as women is because they're all sex offenders who want to use women's bathrooms. Isn't that true?
Yeah.
Okay, so long as we have that.
Yeah, it's amazing that, you know, you want to go use the bathroom, and that suddenly makes you a pervert.
Mm-hmm.
And
Hobby Lobby has a solution to that. Hold on. It's on my computer. You know, everybody keeps saying, oh, the Hobby Lobby decision that the Supreme Court made isn't that bad. It's very narrow ruling. It only applies to certain types of birth control that they can still get. They just have to buy it themselves, right? That's all the Hobby Lobby decision. In the wake of the Supreme Court's Hobby Lobby ruling, Ross, do Duthout, who's a staunch defender of legalized discrimination, also called pluralism and religious freedom. He came up with a column called A Company That Liberals Could Love. In that piece, Duthout argued that progressives should admire Hobby Lobby's moral calling and do-gooder policies, its relatively high wages, it apparently pays a living wage, and charitable giving. Chief among their charitable giving is to focus on the family, but that's beside the point. Anyway, you know, and he lauds that you can still buy an IUD, it just because it'll cost you a full week's salary and other people. Anyway, what happened was after the Hobby Lobby ruling, Hobby Lobby doubled down, stating that it was within its rights to deny trans employees bathroom access.
Yeah.
Denying any bathroom access.
They can't go to
the company
individual.
Hasn't formally cited its religious beliefs yet, but for now it's asserting that its actions don't violate, and this was specifically in Illinois' Human Rights Act, which contains somewhat ambiguous bathroom rights for transgender people. But religious objections plainly lie behind Hobby Lobby's anti-trans policies. There's no real reason for the company to contest the reality of the person who filed the complaint, her gender, which state and federal law recognize as female. In other words, she has a female driver's license, birth certificate, passport, everything says female. They just don't want her to go to the bathroom in one of their stores. What do you do?
Well, first you're going to have OSHA violations here because now you're creating, it's a workplace safety issue. So they may claim that they're not violating human rights statutes. Well, you're probably violating federal and state employment law and occupational safety rules. So you're probably still going to run afoul of that. Now, you know, there are still a lot of bathroom problems. That's a major transgender issue that, again, the gay community doesn't have because you continue to use the same bathroom. If I walked into a men's bathroom, I'm going to at least get some stares.
Mm-hmm. But you know something? This is what I found, because most of the discrimination complaints that I hear about have to do with bathrooms. Men don't care. Somebody walks into the men's room. Men don't care. You go in, you do your business, you leave. Women are nuts about their bathrooms, and they are just crazy people about their bathrooms. Sorry, I don't mean to offend you, but women are crazy people.
Would you be territorial?
I think this more is more territorial.
I mean, I rub against the door to signal to you guys that this is a ladies' room, but you don't pick up on the scent. It works for my cats.
You see, and I guess that's what it is. We're just not picking up on those signals.
Guess that's it.
No, but yeah, there's definitely, you know, a gender bias there. I mean, if I walked into a men's room and they figured out, wait a minute, this is a transgender person, well, at that point, I'm probably in danger.
Mm-hmm.
Because where a lot of the men there probably aren't going to care. They're just there to do the business.
It could be one that does.
And all it's going to take is that one.
And it's not that he cares that there's a woman, a transgender person, or what, you know, whoever in the bathroom. It's that he doesn't like the transgender person.
Right.
And that's
right.
Where the danger is.
Yeah, there was a big hue and cry in California. They had AB, 1266, that was really the School Opportunity Act and fairness to allow transgender students to use the bathroom that was appropriate for them and also to join sports teams and clubs and that sort of orientation. And there was a lot of hue and cry from the right wing saying, oh, well, it's going to lead to attacks in bathrooms. Guys are just going to want to go in there and say, oh, I'm a girl for a day. And that's not how it works at all. And the interesting thing that, you know, I think some of the defenders brought up is that the LA Unified School District, one of the biggest school districts in the nation, has had that policy in place for like 15 years, and there's been zero problems. Not one. Zero. And I know I've been using women's restrooms for quite some time. Katie has as well. How many women have you assaulted in a women's restroom?
None.
No, not
I mean,
so
that
far.
Wasn't the reason you did this.
No, it's going there to go to the bathroom. And the interesting thing, too, is that there's stall doors in there. So it's not a voyeuristic environment at all. You just go in, you shut the door, you do your business,
and you leave.
That's all I want to do.
Right. This is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Ron Landis. Our guests today are Leslie Michel and Katie Sprinkle. We'll be back talking about more trans issues and trans stuff right after this.
You are listening to KNON 89.3 FM in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
Want to find out about upcoming events at KNON? Want to see pictures from past events or need information about the station? Then you need to like the official KNON Facebook page. It's easy to find. Just go to facebook.com/KNON893. It's the KNON 89.3 FM station-produced page for Facebook. It's the easiest way to keep up with what's going on here at KNON. Like us and share with your friends today. That's facebook.com/KNON893. Accept no substitutions.
This is Jake Winters from Leicester, England, and I listen to Lambda Weekly on KNON 89.3 FM.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Katie Sprinkle. Katie is an attorney. And Media Whore, we decided, is the appropriate title. Leslie Michel McMurray.
We're mentioning media. We've seen, I think it's a wonderful thing, but we've seen, you know, a great deal of new exposure of trans individuals in the media, you know, particularly Laverne Cox. She's the actress on the show Orange is the New Black. She became the first trans individual to be on the cover of Time magazine, and she just made history again a couple of weeks ago. Now she's nominated for an Emmy. First trans individual will be nominated for an Emmy. Of course, there's Janet Mock and some others that are, you know, just really making a name for themselves and putting the trans issue out in front, and I think that's great. So what do you think about that?
Well, I think it's given exposure to a lot of people about what it means to be transgender. And with a lot of the interviews that we're seeing and some of the questions, I think, particularly when you see Janet or Laverne, you know, when certain questions come up, they do try to set the record straight and say, wait a minute, that's not appropriate for this, because there's still a lot of inappropriate questions being asked of the transgender community. And
boy, does Laverne ask them.
I asked them. Well, specifically what she's getting at is, which we talked about before the show, is the issue of surgery questions. And Janet, in particular, has been very, in my opinion, I think in some of the interviews, she's like really gotten confrontational about it when she's asked about it. And Laverne also, but Laverne just kind of has, I guess she has a smoother style than Janet. And so I just wanted to hear your thoughts about that, you know. Are those questions appropriate? How they're delivered, or are they just completely off the table?
I think that's gonna, for me personally, it's an individual thing. Mm-hmm. If we're in a situation where we're talking about my new television show, which, in Laverne's case, why are you gonna ask her about her body, her physical being, when you're actually there supposedly to talk about a television show? So it's inappropriate in that setting.
Totally,
if we're talking about broader topics that deal with the transgender community, is there an appropriate way and time? Perhaps. My take on it, and again, we talked about this before the show, the fact is that, you know, what does it mean to be transgender? And, you know, the fact that your body and your mind don't match. And the method for treating that is to take you through transition to a point where that conflict that exists between the mind and body is alleviated.
Okay, so what is it that makes somebody transgender?
Your brain is set to be one gender, and yet your body is another. So I have a female brain with a male body. And so what ends up happening is a condition known as dysphoria. That is a conflict between the two. The example I like to use is when you're motion sick. Your body thinks your body is moving in one direction when it's actually doing something else, and you get nauseous. Well, dysphoria is sort of a mental nausea, and it's a constant thing that's in your head. You learn to deal with it better at different times, but there are triggers that make it worse. So that's what makes someone transgender. They have a brain that is one gender, a body that's another, and they're in conflict. So now the
So you're saying the transgender then is, if you're presenting as male, you were born male, but you can still be transgender. It's not
right.
When you've had surgery. That's an end point.
Right. And again, the...
For some people.
It's, when you look at it, it's a continuum. And again, what you're trying to do is get the necessary treatment level to resolve the dysphoria. For some people, that may just be hormones. Mm-hmm. Take hormones, the dysphoria is resolved, and they don't need to go any further. So surgery is off the table because you just don't need it.
And, see, and that's why I thought that the question is fair in a proper context. You know, if you've been given, like I said before the show, if you've been given this platform to talk about trans issues, surgery is part of it for some individuals. So to totally throw it off the table and not talk about it, I don't know.
I think that's how you ask the question.
Absolutely.
It's that kind of prurient, you know, ooh, I want to know what's between your legs.
Right, absolutely.
Business, but if mm-hmm. yeah, it deals with how does this change?
How does it change? Is it even necessary?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the other thing that I think it brings up is for a long time, that's what people thought we did. They were sort of programmed to think that. I mean, when you look at the way the media has portrayed, you know, Christine Jorgensen, Renee Richards,
mm-hmm.
people thought it was just an operation. You went and checked into the hospital that rainy Tuesday because you had nothing better to do, and you walked out a new gender.
Well, and now it's because you want to go into girls' bathrooms
right.
and molest
right.
little
and,
girls.
And the religious right wants you to believe, well, you want to just go into the ladies' room.
Yeah, if you knew half the stuff that we had to do, you know, people would say, oh, it's a lifestyle choice.
Mm-hmm. and I think you're right. That's been programmed in most of our minds that in order to be transgender, especially legally, you have to go have surgery.
Right.
And I remember having this huge debate with this woman that I work with. There was a story that came out about a child who had transitioned from a male to female, and I don't think the child had surgery, but she assumed that they had surgery on a little boy, and she was just up in arms about it. And I was just like, no, you do realize that you don't have to have surgery in some states to legally change. And I don't think some of them will ever have surgery, and that's okay. So I thought, you know, that's just another reason why that is an appropriate discussion, just to clear it for
right,
some people.
Right, because I think if we walked into this room and David asked me, so Katie, if you had surgery, that's sort of reinforcing this concept that the only way I could be considered female is if I've had surgery in some way.
And you don't.
And so when Janet or Laverne step up and say, look, you don't need to ask me that. My name is Laverne Cox. My name is Janet Mock. I'm a female. That's all you need
right.
to know. Because, again, I think what we're trying to do is break out of some of the stereotypes that's been created about what it means to be transgender. Because, again, it's not something you thought up that rainy Tuesday, went in Wednesday morning, had surgery. It's something that's been with you. I was 4 years old the first time I started thinking, okay, wait a minute, something's not making sense to me. Mm-hmm. Gender identity begins to express itself the 4, 5, 6-year-old range. And the more you're exposed to that binary that you don't feel works for you, the worse it gets. And so as you go through life, you begin to make sense of it. You suppress it. You fight it. You're in a level of denial. There comes a point where you have to really kind of dig down because you've buried it, and you have to let it out, and then you have to accept yourself. And once you do that and you start moving forward, you're like, okay, I can see where this was throughout my life. So it's not something that you thought up one day, you snapped your fingers, and it was there. It's been with you forever. You may be able to have more sense of it.
All right. Did you want to say?
Yeah, can you imagine if a guy with gynecomastia, which is breasts on a man, if he was denied the privileges of being a man, was forced to use women's bathrooms and, you know, not given the rights and privileges of men, how that person would feel, knowing that they fully identify as male and in other ways are male as well. So it's I guess it's a little bit of trying to get other people to understand what we're going through, because it's I was sitting in a restaurant full of people with some friends not that long ago, and I was looking out at the other diners, and I was commenting to my friends. I said, they all got up this morning and had no issues whatsoever battling their gender. And I don't know what that's like to wake up in the morning and not have that be a concern. I have no idea what they feel and what they go through not having to think about that.
And you were actually married before.
Yeah.
Katie, you were you never were. You always knew that there was that you were transgender.
Yeah, and again, you suppress it. My watershed year was when I went to law school after I graduated. That's when I really started thinking, okay, I really need to stop suppressing this and sort of explore it a little more. And it began to make more sense. It still took me many, many years of digging and therapy to kind of get to the heart of what was going on. But part of the reason I never married was because I always had this buzzing in my head, and there came a point where I said, you know what, I can't try to deal with a relationship where I have to hide something and deal with this at the same time. It just became... It was overwhelming. So,
which is something that's different than what a lot of straight, a lot of gay people do, who do hide it by getting married.
Right.
Although, is that what you were doing, Leslie?
Yeah, I thought I could fix it. I thought I could cure it. I thought I could push it down. The career that I got into.
So that is similar to what gay people who get married do.
Yeah, very much. You know, I thought I could, and then I knew that I couldn't transition while my kids were in school because I couldn't do that to them. I knew they'd face ridicule, and I would face the possibility of losing my job and, you know, having the breadwinner for the house taken away. So I couldn't do it. So my kids are now grown and living on their own, and
knocking. That's awesome. Well, another like celebrity trans individual I didn't mention is Chaz Bono. Do you all notice, or is there, do you think there's a difference in public perception from a man transitioning to a woman than a female transitioning to a man?
Yeah, I think one of the fundamentals is that people understand just intrinsically someone's desire to be male, the top of the food chain, top of the privilege. They understand because masculinity is held as real and legitimate, and femininity still is looked at as a joke, a construct, something that's kind of fake. And why would somebody who's at the top of the pecking order give that up? It's like an insult. There are certain guys that I was friends with that have no idea how I could do this. You know, how could you give all this up? And,
yeah,
you know, how can you give that up?
There's that sexism at play here. Yeah. Women are less than, so why would you want to be less than? And then, of course...
And your answer to that is, it's not a matter of wanting to be, it's that's just
that's
who
you
are.
Am. So
right.
You are.
And again, it's the whole, you know, gender is between your ears. Sex is between your legs. And I think people don't understand that. They don't, you know, we're so focused on the physical body, which again brings back the surgery question. We're so focused on that. Tails don't wag dogs. The brain does all of that. And if we had a way to look at the brain and say, oh, wait a minute, this is a female brain and it's in a male body, okay, we need to address that. That's the appropriate way to do it. That doesn't exist.
And one of the things that... a lot of straight people who are looking at, well, why would you want to be gay? Or and gay people who answer, well, why would I choose this? Well, because I'm happy with who I am, I choose it because that's who I am. I would think somebody who's transgender would also say, I chose it because, and by choosing it, I mean choosing to present as female.
And do something about
it.
Yeah, I've heard it described, the dysphoria, by different people, and it's interesting because they're all very similar, but a friend of mine describes it as a toothache, and that sometimes it doesn't hurt much at all, but it's just there. It's a little bit annoying. Sometimes it's excruciating. It's so bad you can't sleep. You can't think about anything else. I always described it as a hum, and that some days that hum is like at a 3, and you can hear it, but it's, you know, it's not obstructive. There's other days that it's at a 9 or a 10 where it's deafening, and you just want to jump out a window to make it get quiet. But it's always, always, always there. It never, ever, ever goes away.
Hmm. And that's a difference, I think, than what most gay people feel, because your sexual orientation, once you're happy with who you are and who you're part, there's no hum there, there's no, oh, gee, if I could only be straight. It's not anything that I've thought about in 70 or 80 years.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you come out as gay, and, you know, any angst that you had was not, this is who I am, it was the pressures that's being put on you externally, you know, that, well, no, you should be this way. Mm-hmm. And those are very similar concepts to what transgender people feel. It operates slightly different. Mm-hmm. Our dysphoria is internal, but gay people have a dysphoria because they're getting bombarded with all these signals and messages from society, mm-hmm. that says what they're doing is somehow wrong, and nobody ever bothered to ask them, are you okay with that? And so the question is where our internal versus the external forces come into play, and when they clash, we get some form of dysphoria, whether it's our gender identity or our sexual orientation. People often, I think, they want this to be a choice, mm-hmm. because if it's a choice, well,
we can say there's something wrong.
Yeah.
That you shouldn't do that.
We're punishing your behavior. But if it's who you are, we're punishing you as a person. And that's bigotry, and we don't do that.
You know, and one of those things, that's why I always like to say about being gay, if it's a choice, so what?
Yeah.
As the United States, I have a right to choose who I am and what I do. And
absolutely.
You still don't have a right to discriminate against me.
If it is a choice, you woke up in the morning, just out of the blue, you wanted to go change your gender, so be it. Right.
And I know no one who at the age of 13 showed up to junior high and went, boy, that quarterback is really, really hot. But, boy, so is that chief cheerleader. Mm-hmm. Do I want to be straight? Do I want to be gay? Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh. Well, you know what? Mom and Dad are straight. I'm going to be straight. Nobody does that.
Right.
It didn't happen to straight people. It doesn't happen to gay people. It's not a choice. You just know.
Yeah.
And so somebody once asked me, had I ever tried, you know, homosexuality? Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, no. And they're like, well, how do you know you don't like it? Well, you know, I've never tried horse manure, but I know I don't like it.
I don't know. I think I may have tried homosexuality because I was married to a woman. So I guess that makes me a lesbian.
There you go.
That's right.
And that's what's interesting is when people become, when people transition. Come out, transition, they're very often changing their sexual orientation, although not all do.
Yeah, sexual orientation and gender identity are separate issues.
Totally separate issues.
You will have, there have been instances where someone who was gay as their birth gender, after transition, you would presume, okay, well, now they're going to be straight. But then their orientation shifts, they're still gay. There's a trans man in San Francisco who was a lesbian as a female, after transition, is now a gay man. Mm-hmm. So his orientation remained homosexual. It didn't change. But for some, it will go from as a straight man to being a straight woman.
Or is it also a little bit of once, you know, a person transitions, they're just more open to the idea of whatever.
I think labels fall apart when you start dealing with transgender people, because mm-hmm. that's what you're saying. It's like, oh, are you a lesbian, or are you gay, or are you this? I just don't even really care anymore what right. the label is. It just doesn't matter.
Well, and I also think that what you're saying is accurate, that you've been suppressing so many of these feelings for so long that once you've accepted yourself and you begin to let it come out, you now have a license to say, okay, wait a minute, this is who I am. And that includes reevaluating where you are sexual orientation-wise, because you're suddenly, wow, wait a minute, to be a complete person, this is what I've got to do.
Because, I mean, I personally think most people are kind of hardwired one way or the other as far as whether they're straight or gay. But I think there's a fair amount of people whose sexual orientation is the fluidity.
Yeah, don't underestimate the power of estrogen. You know, it does some amazing things.
Right.
You change the whole body chemistry in the body, and all kinds of things happen. It's unbelievable.
We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Lauren Landis. We're talking to Leslie Michelle McMurray.
You're listening to KNON 89.3 FM in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
KNON is a community radio station that has survived on listener support for over 30 years. If you would like to donate at KNON anytime, you can do so by going to KNON.org and clicking on Pledge Now. We appreciate your support and thank you for listening to Dallas's original community radio station, KNON 89.3 FM, the voice of the people.
This is Janice McCall from TCU, and I listen to Lambda Week on 89.3 KNON FM, Dallas.
And this is Lambda Weekly. Josh, or was it Chris who cut us off?
I think that was Josh.
It was Josh who did that? Okay. Josh is our, or Chris is our schizophrenic board operator. what I was trying to say was this is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Lauren Landis. Our guests today are media whore Leslie McMurray and attorney Katie Sprinkle. When we call her... What would a real title for you be, Leslie?
Raconteur?
Okay.
I don't know. I answer the phones at an electrology clinic, so...
Now, you asked, have they been on radio before? This is Katie's first time. Leslie, you spent years in radio.
Yeah, 33 of them.
And you were fired because you were transgender?
No, I can't say that.
Okay, I can say that, though.
But
it would be unfair for you to say that because... One of the largest radio networks in the country, they kind of felt that, you know, hey, you don't have a face for television, Lauren,
and
so you have a perfect face for radio. Apparently, at this network, it does matter what you look like on the radio.
Well, it's not just that network. There was a very interesting conversation I had with somebody who was kind of a mentor for me. She transitioned back in the early 1990s, and she's a country radio consultant. And if you can think about the early 1990s and country radio, someone becoming transgender on that, and she still to this day, she has a very successful consultancy. But she recently had to hire another woman because there are still clients that value her advice but don't want her in the building. Which is kind of interesting. Anyway, I called her, and she's been a longtime friend of mine, and I came out to her 2 years ago or so. And I told her where I worked, and she said, well, you work for probably the best company to give this a whack. But she said, if you're successful, you'll be the first. And that just gave me chills, because that the truth of the matter, I know another woman who's had fantastic ratings in San Francisco, of all places, and she can't buy employment. She's now like a web developer in... near Austin. She's just completely given up on radio. She tried for 10 years to get back into it, and she was always successful as far as ratings. So as far as I know, in 10,000 commercial radio stations across America, there's not a single transgender person that's holding down a regular air shift or has a job of program director, and I think that's disgusting, and it's a shame.
Wow.
And, I mean, you'd think there'd be at least one or two, but there's zero.
Right,
so
right.
When, you know, people say, oh, we don't need ENDA, people already have protections. I say BS. We do, too, need it. Because, you know, even if you've got protections in your policy manual, which that company that let me go did, they generally don't hire people to protect.
And
good point.
The station that Leslie was on had the highest ratings of that company's collection
of
stations here.
So, yeah, the ratings were fine, and just 60 days before I got let go, I was given an award for excellence, which is sitting in my cabinet at home, for the entire year in front of the company. So I thought that was kind of ironic. That, you know, it's not
during
that,
those 2 months, she was no longer excellent.
I forgot how to do what I was doing.
Yeah.
All right.
So,
all right.
Yeah. Happens.
Yeah, it happens.
You know,
yeah.
As we get older,
people
we just kind of, maybe that's what it was.
Shift gears a little bit. Another big issue in the trans community, and I have some trans friends, and they talk about this a lot. When you date, you tell? When do you tell? Or do you not tell at all?
I mean, it really is going to boil down to the individual and who you're dating. We were talking about this before the show. There are some transgender people who live what we call stealth life.
Yeah, that's right. New term. I hadn't heard before. What does that mean?
What that means is once they've completed their transition, that typically means they've gone through surgery and everything, they then completely disassociate themselves with the transgender community, any recognition that they had a different life at some point. And in those instances, of course, they don't tell. For someone like myself, who is fairly open about it, mm-hmm. I would tell very, very early on. Oh, by the way, you know I'm transgender. If that's a problem, there's the door.
Right.
And others are going to wait. But it's a personal comfort level for each individual. Obviously, you don't want to do it the night before a wedding. Probably a little tardy.
Right, right.
You probably need to do it before then, but anywhere in between.
But there's also, I think, you know, reason that you bring it up and discuss that as a valid question is that there's, and I think it's lessening now, but there still was a defense that was being used called trans panic, where
just like the gay
transgender
panic.
Women have been getting beaten to death, murdered, and the perpetrators of these violent crimes have been getting let off because they are so mortified at finding out that someone's transgender that they feel like it's a free ticket to bash their skulls in. So there certainly is a certain amount of fear and trepidation, and it's not just a matter of when to tell, but where. You know, make sure it's in a public place, maybe.
When is it safe?
Yeah, when is it safe for you to do so? Because you just don't know. But I have a friend who's transgender, and she kind of uses the third date as kind of a benchmark.
It's a guide.
Yeah, it's just kind of a guideline.
And, you know, something else that Leslie brought up, you know, Laverne Cox had recently said, you know, she was on the cover of Time, and during that time period, three trans women were murdered. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there still is a lot of danger for transgender people as well as for gay people. You know, I think it was in Baltimore. They've had three trans women murdered in a span of about 6 to 8 weeks. So there's still a lot of violence directed at the transgender community. Transgender people of color are something like three times more likely to face violence. 1 in 12 transgender people in the course of their life will face some sort of violent confrontation. So the statistics are terrifying. You know, the one piece of advice I give to all transgender people anytime I get to speak is practice personal safety. Know where you are at all times because it's still not safe. Mm-hmm. It's getting better, but three trans women in one city in 2 months, you still have to be careful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And telling somebody on a date, that's where the fear comes in. You've got to be careful. You need to do it in a safe environment. If you are going to come out to someone you're seeing, make sure you're in a safe environment. Make sure you have an escape plan because, again, you never know how that's going to turn out, and you've got to be safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have either of you, and this is a personal question, have either of you had a bad experience with telling somebody?
No.
Okay. I'm very fortunate. The people that I considered to be my friends and, of course, my family were all shocked but very supportive. Mm-hmm. So been very fortunate. The only bad experience, really, was getting called an it in a department store.
Mm-hmm. You said you had an Austin Airport story.
I was at the Austin Airport. I was flying to California to see a friend, and I was, because I hadn't had my IDs changed yet, I decided I'd better go somewhat androgynously. But I wasn't fooling anybody. I'd been on hormones for a year at that point. So I'm at the Austin Airport. I've got to go to the bathroom. So I'm like, well, what bathroom do I go to? I look more feminine than masculine. So I just decided I'm going to go to the ladies' room. Mm-hmm. So I get up and I go to the ladies' room. Well, they were working on the ladies' room at my gate. So I had to walk to another gate. Well, they were working on that one too. So I ended up at a third gate, where there's this huge line coming out of the women's room. I'm like, okay, I'm not waiting in that line. So I went in to the men's room.
Mm-hmm.
I go into one of the stalls, I do my business, and when I step out of the stall, there are two men directly in front of me washing their hands. They see me in the mirror, they kind of do this double take over their shoulder, and I just kind of smile and start walking out the door, and a man is walking in as I'm walking out. He stops, takes two steps back, and looks at the sign to make sure he's walking into the correct restroom. And so then one of the women that I was in line with, she was like, "You use the men's room?" I was like, "Yep, stalls are free." Within 5 minutes, there was a stampede of women going into the men's room. And I'm like, Homeland Security is never going to let me fly again.
Oh, my God. I love that. I love that.
And it just shows, when it comes right down to it, men don't care who's in there.
Well, I think when it comes right down to it, the point is, when people got to go to the bathroom, they got to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Unless you work for Hobby Lobby.
Unless you work for Hobby Lobby.
You cannot go to the bathroom.
You know, it's a shame there's not another place that sells that type of material.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
I won't shop at Hobby Lobby.
And none of us will. This week, President Obama issued an executive order, and it's an employment non-discrimination order, and it applies to not just employees of the federal government, but anybody who contracts with the federal government. So if Laurent, your company, were to do work with the federal government, they would have to have an employment policy in place that says that they do not discriminate based on sexual orientation or gender identity. Now, the gender identity part applies to transgender people. And one of the things that we were very worried about was that there was going to be this huge religious exemption, and there wasn't.
There wasn't. Though they did ask. They, some of the religious leaders did.
They wanted it. There were a number of religious leaders who asked for that not to be there.
Yes, yes.
So
good for them.
Yeah.
And it's not. So it's not there.
Right. From your perspective, does it do what an executive order can do? It's not the same as ENDA. It doesn't.
No.
It doesn't protect everybody. It does protect all of the Irving employees at Exxon, Exxon's been resisting putting it into their non-discrimination policy for years. They said they're going to comply. And you know what? It'll be really easy for them to. You know why? Basically, the company doesn't discriminate.
Yeah.
They're just stubborn.
Right.
I think where this is really going to help is people are going to see, wait a minute, you know what? We put these things in there, and our businesses haven't gone bankrupt. There hasn't been, the apocalypse that many will predict. And so I think it's a good place to start. I think Leslie mentioned it earlier when California enacted a statewide policy to protect transgender students. All you had to do was look at the L.A. County school districts that already had it in place, and the world didn't come to an end in L.A., so there was no reason to believe it's going to happen statewide. And, of course, my hope is that you'll see the same thing. You'll see all these companies that do business with the federal government, none of whom will go out of business or have all kinds of employment problems, and other companies will say, well, look at that.
You know, San Antonio is coming up on 1 year for their non-discrimination ordinance that came in. Do you know how many complaints have been filed in that year? And the predictions were this is going to cost the city a fortune, it's going to be terrible for business. Do you know how many have been filed? One. And you know what? It's against a company with a 100% rating with Human Rights Campaign.
Interesting.
It's against AT&T.
Another thing that would be nice to see included is getting rid of the exclusions in healthcare for transgender care, because it's also going to be another little bit of a battleground just to get them to think differently, because, again, trans health issues are different than a lot of healthcare issues. For instance, in many cases, if a transgender woman has a prostate issue, it won't be covered by the insurance company because women don't have prostates.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Right, which is one of those things that seems just counterintuitive. It seems like your insurance should cover your illnesses.
You'd think so.
Period.
a man who has, or a trans man who has cervical cancer, mm-hmm. not covered.
Not covered.
I mean, and that's, you know, some things.
In California, their health exchanges mandate, the state of California mandates that those health exchanges cover transgender care, which is great. It includes surgeries, both facial, gender correction surgery. Mm-hmm. All of that is covered by those insurances in California. But in
Maryland just changed their law this year, this week, but it only has to do with state employees and, again, any kind of any company that does business mm-hmm. with the state.
And you also have to look at where insurance companies were coming from. It was a total exclusion to coverage. If you were transgender, they just didn't give you insurance at all. And I've got four letters at home because when I left county employment to start my own business, I needed health insurance. And I had four carriers deny me completely, and their letter was very plain. We don't cover transgender people, period. So they go
wow.
from a total exclusion where they won't even give you basic health insurance, much less cover any of the costs associated with transition. And I wasn't even asking them to cover that.
You were just looking for coverage basics.
Right.
You have a car accident, you go into the hospital, you can go somewhere other than Parkland.
Yeah, I have a cold, I need to go see a doctor,
right.
get some antibiotics. I should have health insurance to help with that. But no, it was a total exclusion. There were only two health insurance companies that would provide coverage, and luckily I got one of them mm-hmm. Who gave me coverage. I still have my coverage through them because they gave me coverage.
What about on the healthcare exchanges? Are there companies excluding trans people?
Well,
on the
there's
exchanges?
One that is still, even though they're participating in exchanges that require them, if you participate in an exchange, you have to give coverage to transgender people. And in those states where it's mandated, there's a couple that are still sort of balking at providing those mm-hmm. coverages.
It rhymes with Blue Cross.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that would be a company that wouldn't be helpful on any number of issues.
But, yeah, so the healthcare exchanges have helped. For a while, it looked like the only health coverage I would get would be through the exchange. But luckily, and I'm going to give them a plug because they didn't discriminate, and that was Cigna. And if I can continue to do business with them, I will, because they covered me when no one else would.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome.
This is one of those cases where it's not a matter of plugging in. It's not a matter of – it's knowing that the company actually has experience covering those things. So while you might change in a few years and other companies that gain some experience in covering trans people – might do a good job eventually, you want to do business where you know they have some experience doing it, and you'll call an agent who's not going to freak out just because you're calling them
right.
about a trans issue that, you know.
Yeah, you can be open and honest on your application with them, and hopefully if you do run into a health problem from your birth gender equipment, after you've transitioned, they will go ahead and cover it. I think some of that may be ignorance, but when you come from this point where you just won't do it, getting them to jump into that fray, taking a little more work.
And we are completely out of time.
Thank you, ladies, very much. Yeah. Thank you for answering such open questions. Really appreciate it.
No
for Lauren Landis, I'm Dave Taffet. The late Patty Fink will be back with us next week. I want to thank Josh and Chris for running the board. Doc runs our cameras, and you can see this podcast later at lambdaweekly.com. We'll be back next week.
Okay, David, you can do it.